Hello, everybody. Welcome to our podcast series entitled The Wealth Journey. We're trying to cover different areas of your life, all the way from graduating straight out of university or from school into your first job, that final part of your wealth journey where you actually end up retiring. And we want to talk about the financial aspects of that. This first part of the wealth journey is that early phase, that early career part, the early marriage part, the having children part. And I've got two guests with me here. We're going to walk us through some of that. So we've got Elelwani Ravele, who's an advisory partner with Citadel, and Kirsty Smith, who's an advisory partner with Citadel. Guys, just for a sec, if you could introduce yourselves to our listeners or our viewers, that would be great. Elelwani?
My name is Erone Ravere. My background is in finance and investment, academic-wise, and I've been with Citadel for almost 5 years now.
Kirsty?
Super. I'm in my 14th year at Citadel now, and it's been, an amazing journey. And I always say that financial health and investment health very much forms part of all your other healths. So your mental health, your physical health. So it's all kind of in balance. Yeah. I'm a mom of four tiny kids. So life is busy and hectic. So I think hopefully I'll have some tips to share with you as families and bringing up your own children and what they can expect in their wealth journey.
We're going to sort of set the scene. We're straight out of school, whatever that may have looked like. You're getting into your first job, starting your career, but you're sort of earning your first salary now. Before you can think about how to spend it, what advice would you give our listeners or our viewers on what to do with that first salary from sort of a budgeting perspective? Maybe let's start with you, Elelwani.
I remember it like yesterday, getting the first salary. For me, it had more to do with the responsibilities back at home. I had to split the money between my nephew's school fees and then also buy an Ultramel for myself. it was so exciting just having that first paycheck. Something that I also think about today is how your first salary, the way how you spend it, will determine the rest of the trajectory of your, salaries that follow afterwards. And I'm so happy I invested it in education, because many years later, I'm still continuing to make that investment. So it always depends on the circumstances as well. And also just to enjoy it. I got to pay myself, which really felt good. I got to pay myself. And it's something that I also encourage young clients when I meet them fresh from varsity. I tell them, pay yourself first. You earned it.
I know nobody wants to hear budgeting. How do we think about sort of the financial aspects and planning in that early phase?
Well, I think it's about realizing the fact that your income is mostly finite unless you commission based. So you've got to realize there are ins and there are outs. And generally, there tend to be way more outs than ins. So I think if you can get into the discipline of understanding, right, these are my ins, and then really trying to get a grip and a handle on what your outs are, you can then start creating and making sure that you have a deliberate surplus that is then created, which then goes into a savings stream. And then that saving stream can obviously be determined by your package and what kind of how your pay package is being structured, whether you need to set aside for your own RA or whether there's a provident fund already part of your package. Often when you're young, it's the last thing on your radar. It's the best kind of time to start saying, all right, I'm going to think about this and actually set the trajectory straight and really start being deliberate about my savings journey and starting to get into the whole power of compounding thing. And it is phenomenal.
Outside of just saving for retirement, is just general discretionary savings important? And you mentioned time. Like, how important should I start when I'm 19 or 22, or can I wait till I'm 30?
The first part of discretionary savings is building up an emergency fund. So you have to have at least 3 months worth of your ins saved up. Once you've got that in place, you then start building up on the discretionary side. And discretionary is really important because your retirement assets that you're building up within, like retirement funds, those are essentially locked in inverted commas until you're 55 plus. So discretionary savings become really important because they're liquid and you can access them. Ideally not, but if you need to, you can.
your retirement funds are locked in. Your discretionary money is what is not locked in. You know, you get to save it towards emergency. You get to spend it on your holidays. And also just breaking it down from the onset, you know, your ins and your out. What are your expenses? Let's first determine your expenses. So now for a new graduate, they don't even have a car bill as yet. They don't have a bond as yet, you know. And now you need to start creating the expenses for them, because that's where it starts. Repaying back the car, the petrol, you know, insurance, you know, and then groceries.
Often we'll sort of come at it the other way, where we'll spend the money and then sort of see what's left over for the probably discretionary spending. And that budgeting concept, I guess, should start with, look, how much do we want to save and what are we saving for? And then you sort of work down towards, look, what can I afford from like a groceries perspective and that sort of thing. And it has to be line by line. Elalwani, I'm curious, especially for people that don't know how to budget, but they feel like they're still so early in that journey that they don't need to speak to an expert. Would you recommend that a 23-year-old, first job, consider talking to like a financial planner or a wealth manager already?
Day one, before you even receive the money in your bank account, when you get the call, you must be looking for a reputable financial advisor, working for a reputable institution. That's very, very important. Why do I emphasize that? It's because we want to do away with the concept of being sold and bombarded with products from day one, and then you're overwhelmed. So finding an advisor to create a budget for you is very, very important. Do you have any responsibilities at home? It's just exploring all the dynamics of the client. Do you want to get married in the future? Do you want to have children? Do you want to travel? Do you want to further your studies? Just asking all of those questions, it really helps to just narrow it down and create a realistic budget.
Our generation, the generations that are younger than us, they feel like they have the resources available. They feel like there's apps and social media. What do you think is the benefit of actually sitting down with a wealth manager?
Start exploring. Start getting a feel for the different asset classes. What do equities do? How do they change as markets change? What is the bond, cash, property? All of that. The minute you start making mistakes, you kind of realize an advisor is the right way to go. And then kind of you step in and then get into that more kind of responsible kind of way, proper diversification within your portfolio and the like. But I'm okay with a little bit of exploring at this time. And I think it's good because it actually makes you realize just how important an advisor is.
Make mistakes, yeah, but try and see that financial manager early, because the wealth management planning really, really helps. I'm going to talk retirement specifically now. And we often hear the stats. South Africans don't have enough savings for retirement. Elalwani?
Speaking of retirement, my research thesis actually is on retirement planning. And what inspired it is because of the stats that we've had in South Africa for over 10 years, that only less than 10% of South Africans can afford to retire, which is a big problem, you know. So just seeing that number alone, I think it's 6%, if I'm not mistaken, seeing that number makes one to be worried. And, you know, when it comes to the deduction that you spoke about, how I go about doing it is I start from the end goal. What type of lifestyle do you want to have when you retire? I actually force my clients to think about their future. You know, where do you want to retire? Because where you want to retire determines how much we're going to save. You know, if you're going to be retiring in a very nice suburban city, you know, where municipality rates are high, you know, levies are high, then we need to save more. But if you're going back to the rural areas, you don't really need that much. So I work it backwards, you know, to determine how much more or less do you need to save.
First, your thoughts on that?
I think first and foremost, you've got to know the future is going to surprise at some point and your life is going to evolve. So what you think your life is going to look like when you 20 is very different to how your life is often panning out when you're 40, kind of 50. So I think you've got to go in with the mindset that I need to kind of go with the flow a bit, rather err on the side of caution and build up too much rather than too little. Inevitably, we're all living longer and longer. I mean, the reality now is that you, in most cases, if you retire at a traditional age of 65, for most of us, we're going to be retired for longer than the amount of years that we worked. That's a hang of a lot of money that you've got to build up and capital that you've got to get working for you to be able to be financially independent.
Let's talk about decision one. After graduating, you want to buy your first car. What do we need to think about? Elalwani, let's start with you.
first and foremost, research. I should have researched, you know, I should have found out how much was the car going to cost me? How much was petrol going to cost me? How much was insurance going to cost me? Try, and I mean, these days, a lot of banks allow consumers to do calculations, like rough estimates of how much you're going to qualify for, how much is it going to cost you. So I actually encourage a lot of youngsters to play around with the apps to find out how much roughly is it going to cost them. Go maybe 3 to 6 months of putting that money aside to see, can you do without it? Do you need to reduce or increase?
And I think you need to take it back even a step before that. You've got to realize, and this is like rule number one, a car is not an asset. Mm. It is a lifestyle asset. It's there to be enjoyed, and that is and to get you from A to B. It is by no means an investment. If cars are really, really your thing, okay, you can overspend on a vehicle, but then you can't do the vehicle and travel and. I'd far rather you err on the side of caution with a car and get what you can within your means.
But let's get to first home, okay? Because that's a proper asset, illiquid. And from that perspective, again, this generation, the younger generation, is all about renting and not buying. So if we just think about the sort of considerations around that for younger people and buying a first home in sort of today's climate, what does that look like, Kirst?
When you're linking it to the younger generation, that's all about wanting to be flexible. The idea of pouring a lot of your savings into a single asset that ties you down is quite daunting. The good thing about property is it's a forced saving, but you do need to differentiate between property being an investment asset and a lifestyle asset. So if it's the property that you live in and you aren't creating any kind of yield from it, it is essentially a lifestyle asset. But yes, there is capital growth associated and the like, and you working towards a good credit record, which is really important. And if you've taken a bond, you're creating leverage opportunity for yourself down the line. So I think you need to put all of that into the pot when considering a property, and then all the rules about property apply. You want to try and buy the worst property in the best area. So area becomes really, really important. It's about affordability. It's about saying, right, is there an opportunity to sweat this property? You might not be married or coupled up with that stage. You say, okay, well, I'm in a 3-bedroom place. I'm going to rent the other 2 rooms to a mate or to mates. That's fantastic. Then at least you're paying your levies and your rates and the like. So it really is about thinking, how best can I sweat this asset? And ideally then, if you've got a bond, it's obviously about looking to pay that off as quickly as you possibly can, yeah, particularly if it's a lifestyle asset.
Yeah, that's brilliant advice. How should I think about budgeting when buying a house?
Well, there isn't really a set figure except for what are you comfortable with. And also something very important with property is, I mean, there's levies, you know, water and electricity, transfer costs. You know, something that people also don't know about, and the attorneys, is it the attorneys?
Conveyancing fees.
The stress test is also important, something that I teach my clients to do. Do 6 months of that money, putting it away to see, are you comfortable? Do you need to adjust your budget or not?
Can we discuss marriage a little bit? What are the financial conversations we should be having just as a couple wanting to get married, Kirst?
It's realizing that you're coming from different backgrounds entirely, and it shapes your values around money and savings and investment and the like. So I think you need to take that into consideration, realizing, okay, we're coming from different spaces, but we need to create some kind of common ground here. And it's about having those hard conversations and about communicating and being open and saying, okay, well, this makes me uncomfortable when you're spending, and I'm rather a natural saver, and vice versa. So it's about having that conversation and saying, right, let's be deliberate here. Let's create a common budget between us, but you also create a degree of flexibility. So we say, right, 60% or 70% goes into a joint kind of pot, and then you retain 30 to 40% for your own personal spend for what you want to do, essentially. So then you're maintaining some kind of independence, but also realizing, okay, we're now one.
I think being open is so, so important for a financially sophisticated person. You've built up your life, you own assets. How should you think about prenuptial agreements?
All my female clients, you know, whenever they meet a man, I'm the first phone call to make. And the reason for that is I just want to always remind them, this is where you're at, this is where we're going, and this is our goal pertaining your finances. So any person that comes into your life must be aiding to that, not disrupting. I'm the gatekeeper. I'm literally the gatekeeper. And when you all honeymoon in a honey lovey-dovey vase, you know, all common sense flies off the window, and you just need that objective voice.
So what are financial considerations when you're thinking about having a child, trying to start a family?
Save. And I think, just jumping into costs for kids, they evolve over time. So you think it's expensive with nappies and formula. Boy, that's mild. So school starts coming in, but it's not even only education costs. It's all the extras around that. It's school uniforms, extramurals, swimming lessons. Your child need to be able to swim. It's again about being flexible and being willing to make sacrifices and picking a lane. So we are very deliberate in our family about budgeting and plotting the year to come. So we understand, right, we have these tours. This is exactly what the school fees are for the year ahead for each of our four children. These are the extramurals they're going to do. Those are additional line items. All of those need to be factored in.
Then we have to get to how do we think about saving for this child over sort of a longer term period? Not necessarily for their RA, but saving for maybe higher education or giving them a bit of a nest egg when they sort of leave school.
Something that I really preach is about creating financial conversations with your children from when they're really young, getting them comfortable with the concept of money, savings, investments. In terms of investments for my own children, I use tax-free investments. They're highly tax efficient. They're regulated in terms of costs, and they can be really growth intensive. I mean, the ones I use, global equity investments for my four kids as the underlying investment. So I think those are a really good building block.
I do want to get to something more fun. And I want to talk about vacations in any context, pre-kids, post-kids. How do we sort of think about the financial consideration around something that, technically speaking, is not a thing? You know, it's sort of, you go on a vacation, you come back and it's done.
You don't take it out from your emergency pot. That's very important. Yeah. Save for it, plan for it, and make use of the deals.
If you're planning on traveling internationally, watch the rand. And then that's kind of like you're going to buy your flight tickets. Use loyalty programs. So link up with your bank. See what advantages they offer in terms of travel. All wherever you can save, take that. I think holidays are essential, but they do need to be a deliberate part of your saving and saving as a family, that we're all making sacrifices that we can go on a really good trip, hopefully in July this year. So it's about creating that culture and that life balance and the like, but understanding that it comes with sacrifice and it is essentially, it's a luxury.
You don't want to pay for your expenses out of debt. You don't want to create that sort of negative balance. So having it as part of your savings, I think, is crucially important. If you think about the entire conversation we've had, it's covered all the different elements of your early life in that first part of your career. And we sort of broke it down, and you can see that in every single one of those decisions, there's a financial component to it that we often don't think about as carefully as we should. Reach out to us on our website, solidol.co.za. Please engage with us on anything that you've heard in this episode. But thank you to my guests for being here. We're now going to take it all the way to retirement. So if you enjoyed this episode, come along, join us for the next one.